And so, their policy very closely mirrors Saudi Arabia's. It hasn't been sent any troops directly on the ground, but they are part of the coalition.
Meanwhile, this Committee for Protection of Journalists said that Egypt has now become the second deadliest place for journalists in the world. Cairo is where
deadliest,
you live.
Most dangerous. Most dangerous. So it's the second worst jailer of journalists in the world after China. It's probably the most rapid deterioration in press freedom in the world. So there's 23, according to the Committee to Protect Journalists, reporters who are behind bars. Among them is Mahmoud Abu Zaid, a photojournalist known as Shawkan, who was held for over 2 years without seeing a judge, which violates even Egypt's own penal code. You have another journalist called Ismail Iskandarani, who just arrived back. He knew that he was in danger if he was going to go back to Egypt, but he had to see his sick mother. He was taken at the airport and is in prison now. So this is the situation that we're living in.
Well, Sharif, I want you to be very careful when you go back home to Cairo. Sharif Abdelkaddous, Democracy Now! Correspondent, fellow at The Nation. His recent piece is for the Global Post, and we'll link to it. It's called, With U.S. Help, Saudi Arabia is Obliterating Yemen. It's first of a two-part series on Yemen. And that does it for our broadcast. Happy birthday to Renee Feltz. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
You're listening to WHFR Dearborn. And now it's time for our public affairs show. And we call it the new WHFR Journal. So whatever it is, you need to share it. Whatever that seasonal spirit is, you need to share it. And I hope it's a good spirit. This is Jay Koronek, joined by John Conroy here at the WHFR studios, live for our last show of the year. John, we made it another year.
We really did, Jay.
And nobody can hear you yet. No. Let's try that again.
Well, yes, sir. That's right, Jay. And Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to everybody.
And same to you. Yeah, we're not afraid to say Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. I think a comment or two from Jim Hightower or Jack Lesenberry, somebody about that, war on Christmas thing later on. We're going to put a little bit of Christmassy music in the show. That's all from the spirit of the season. That's the lead song, or I always think of it as the main theme from the Polar Express movie. Uh-huh. Which, of course, is usually every season is shown over at the IMAX theater at the Henry Ford, and I think it's in 3D too.
Yes.
So that's sort of becoming a Christmas favorite these days. The elves look a little weird, but other than that, it's a sweet little story that is. I didn't like it the first time I saw it, but it's amazingly grown on me.
Okay.
Somehow. It's something about the animation, which they tried to make very accurate, with they had Tom Hanks in rubber suits to get the movement exactly right. But it's still, it's amazing. It's a combination of, it's almost real, but it's still animation. It's not real, So it adds a special kind of fantasy to it because it fools you. At times you think, that's very lifelike.
Yes.
But, And, of course, we won't mention that other big movie that just opened today, because that's not very Christmassy. And I have to say, I'm not a Star Wars fan, even though I've watched the movies and enjoyed the first one, but not the others. Because they're war-based movies. I had the same problem with, you know, being a pacifist, especially during this time of year. But I have a problem with a lot of the Lord of the Rings movies and the Hobbit movies, because they're based on violence, doing battle. And I know it may be a metaphor, you know, good and evil struggle. But I would hope we can work things out without shooting and killing. Although if we've got the evil empire or who's ever evil this time to fight, maybe they won't listen to reason, you know. But I know Han Solo is there, so even though he's older than I am, he's there, so nothing to worry about.
Obi-Wan Kenobi can't be too far away.
That's right, yeah. Or the little guy.
Yoda.
How much do I know? Well, okay, moving on. This is actually a show that's based on local news and information. It's called the New WHFR Journal, if you haven't tuned in before. And thanks for finding us. We're on every Friday from 1 to 2 o'clock. And by the way, of course, a podcast of the show will be available. And it's for weeks back. They're still available on our website, whfr.fm. Just go to the homepage of whfr.fm and click on... talk shows.
The website?
No, it's talk shows. Talk shows. Well, we got to the website and the homepage. Right. There's three buttons in the middle. One is listen live, the other's performances, music performances, and then there's talk shows. And this is one of the two different talk shows we have each week. This is the WHFR Journal. Okay, so moving into stories here, I guess I should just grab and go through very quickly. This time of year, it's relatively slow news in the papers, but just to touch a few bases here. Let's see, Sunday, Press and Guide. This is Sunday from December 13th. And yes, it is the last show of the season for us, folks, because there'll be special programming on next Friday, the 24th and the 25th here at WHFR. Special shows that we ourselves, our volunteer staff, have pre-recorded with alternative and, but not mainstream necessarily, Christmas music. Seasonal music, not just Christmas, but a variety of things that you don't hear on other stations. And with special wishes, and it's sort of a tradition for us to do those. And there's about a dozen and a half, maybe two dozen shows that will repeat from Thursday, the 24th, Christmas Day, 10 a.m., all the way through Saturday morning, the day after Christmas. And at 10 a.m. when we go back to regular programming. Looking at that Sunday paper here, usually we cover a lot of the stories from Sunday on this show, the Friday before, and nothing in the first part. Oh, my goodness. Okay, well, I didn't need to bring that in. There was nothing that's still current in the second part. What did you see, the holiday party thing?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Also the leadership program.
Okay. Well, here there's so many parties, so many things going on, but from a group called Leaders Advancing and Helping Communities, which I have to say, they're a nonprofit human services organization. I've never heard of them before. Okay, that doesn't mean they don't exist. I haven't heard a lot of people, but they're holding their annual holiday celebration at Lutheran Social Services of Michigan, Wayne County Family Center in Michigan. And LAHC, that's Leaders Advancing and Helping Communities, will serve a hot lunch at 12:30 p.m. December 23rd to more than 150 homeless adults and children, in addition to providing them with food baskets, gifts, and coats. Oh, that's sweet. Santa Claus will be also on site to give children some holiday cheer and a proper welcoming into the holiday season as they receive their gift items. Sponsors are Biblos Banquet Hall, or Biblos, Baraka and Midwest Recycling, and a generous group of other individuals who donated money and gift items. And providing humanitarian aid and assistance, especially during the cold weather, is something of great importance to the LAHC and its members. During the Thanksgiving organization, they provided 1,000 turkeys and food baskets to families in need in partnership with Hype Athletics in Dearborn Heights. So that's a nonprofit doing great things for the local area. And it doesn't say how If you know of a homeless child, you can sign them up for this. But again, it's Lutheran Social Services of Michigan, Wayne County Family Center, 3600 Michigan Avenue. Okay, and so you might be able to find a number or get in touch with them. Leaders Advancing and Helping Communities. But that's nice. That's a nice little story there. You talk about food. We're always looking for segues on radio. That is, we try to move from one story concept to another. We have something different here at the college that's going to be starting next semester. And let me read the press release on it, because it just was announced yesterday officially. Henry Ford College recently opened an on-campus food pantry called the Hawk's Nest. And that's not because it's a bird sanctuary, but that's the nickname of our athletic team,
right?
The Hawks. Okay. Yeah. All of our athletic teams. Is the female team called the Hawkettes?
Nope.
They're not?
Nope.
I thought they were a few years ago, but that would be sexist, right?
That would be.
Yeah. So the male and the female Hawks.
All Hawks.
Right, all Hawks.
They live in the Aries.
Yeah. But what is this Hawk's Nest? Well, again, it's an on-campus food pantry that represents a new college resource to help decrease food insecurity. Notice a clever choice of words. What's another way to say food insecurity, John?
Food insecurity?
To be starving.
To be hungry.
To be hungry.
Yes.
To not know where your next meal is coming from.
To be looking.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep.
And what we're going to be doing here on campus is to offer non-perishable food items to needy students. So don't get in line early for that if you're not a student. Apparently, all it takes, though, is one credit hour, being registered for one credit hour, and have a valid student ID card with a photo. And you don't have to, students don't have to document their food needs. In other words, how hungry are they? How much out of work are they?
Mm-hmm.
And students will register during their first visit to the Hawk's Nest by voluntarily completing a brief client intake form. Okay, an information sheet, okay, which collects demographic information for statistical purposes.
Mm-hmm.
All demographic information is confidential. Registration will be valid for one academic year. Students must re-register to continue receiving food assistance in future academic years. They'll get a membership card, Hawk's Nest membership card with an assigned client number, and they must present that specific card during each visit. These eligible students with that card can visit the Hawk's Nest once per week. The maximum amount of visits is 4 per month. So generally that's 4 times a month, once a week for 4 weeks. Students will select their food as if they were in a grocery store. A selected list of food choices will be available upon request. Students will receive a reusable canvas bag during their first visit and are encouraged to reuse it for each subsequent visit. So supplemental food assistance to those that need it.
Right here on campus.
Yeah, and this is really interesting. These are all non-perishable, non-expired food items, as well as toiletries and, of course, reusable canvas bags that are donated by the HFC community. So indirectly, this press release is saying, hey, Koronek, donate some food to us. You're here on campus. So I mean, yeah, they haven't directly sent anything to the faculty saying donate now.
No.
But they may not send that out actually until the beginning of next semester. But all they do have information here about how we can make, again, the HFC community, faculty, staff, and maybe other students too, and I'm not sure about that, can make donations to the Hawk's Nest. And HFC student Harrison Shelby said, I'm excited that HFC is taking a stance on food insecurity. Again, that's a term. Why not just call it hunger in America?
Right.
But still, food insecurity by opening its on-campus student food pantry. And it's intended to meet the immediate food needs of HFC students by providing a variety of non-perishable food items and personal care items to students at no cost. So I don't have any detailed critique of that, because I think it's certainly a good idea. If people are hungry and have no other options, they need to get food from somewhere. There are social programs in a variety of places throughout the city. I would suggest calling your local city hall on the city you live in, not just to see if the city has resources, but they can give you information about Wayne County resources too. And some of the the shelters and other food distribution points, other organizations. I know
Knights of Columbus.
Well, Knights of Columbus. Feeding America. Mm-hmm. Is Mother Waddle's organization still working under that name somewhere?
I believe so.
In some cases, you have to go and get a meal. It's already cooked for you. In other cases, like this one, I mean, this allows the students here to maybe take some food back home for their family, you know, too. I mean,
because food pantries at this time of the year are always looking for help in many other ways, just besides food, but also help in snacking.
Yeah. Now, this doesn't probably begin until next semester. Okay. Let's see. This is hours of operation are Monday through Friday from 10 to 1 p.m., 10 a.m. to 1 p.m., and 4 to 7 p.m. during the fall and winter semesters. We think during spring and summer too, but we don't have hours for those ready yet. So I would say if you're going to be a student here and you have a problem with food insecurity, to use their term, you can sign up. And, you know, they'll ask you some questions, but it's just statistical, they say. I would think it's always embarrassing to ask for help, but I know a lot of people do have various cards to help them with buying food at grocery stores and that. And, you know, if you got to have food from somewhere, well, get it. You know, don't worry about any sort of a stigma attached to it, because there wouldn't be. So anyway, it's brand new. I didn't know that was even in the works. We'll see how it works out, of course. It's located in the Mazzara building. That's also called the Administrative Services Building. It's Building L on campus. So if you're going to be a student here next semester with 1 hour credit or more, you might, if you have a problem with food insecurity, then come and visit the Hawk's Nest at the HFC campus. A very interesting new program here, and I don't have any other thoughts on it. I just think it's great that there's a variety of ways that we can help people and that people can get help in the society.
And in conjunction with that, this is this relates to that with the story in the Wednesday Times Herald that Dearborn and Dearborn Heights Goodfellows had banner years in raising money in their newspaper drives. And there's a picture of Ron Haddad right on the front cover here.
Our police chief, because the police are always involved heavily in since there's not that many newspaper deliverers anymore, newspaper carriers, they have to go to other organizations like police and fire and volunteers from one place or the other. But yeah, and I think the weather really helped it. You know, it hasn't been that cold. So standing outside, even coming to a stop with your car, you know, at an intersection where they're collecting money for the Goodfellows, it's not that much of an effort to roll down your window. It's not snowing heavily on you, you know. you know, and you don't want to get snowed on or rained on or something. So in the better weather, I would think they would be able to have people standing out there. They'll get more volunteers to stand out to collect the money, but also people be more willing to spend an extra moment or two to give money.
Well, true enough. And no matter what the weather, the folks that are volunteering to collect those monies definitely should be given some credit.
Mm-hmm. Also, lead story in the Press and Guide for Wednesday about firefighters pulling together, as they do every year, to bring Christmas to local children. Shows that they went to the Beaumont Center for Exceptional Families on Rotunda Drive in the last week and gave out presents. And, of course, they had certain firefighter-related characters like Chiefy the Clown, Sparky the Fire Dog, and Santa Claus, of course, helping these kids. But that's part of what the firefighters do every year in almost every community. Not necessarily a Christmas story, but it's on the front page also, the Press and Guide from this week, Wednesday, December 16th. Ken Barron has just retired from the Dearborn City Council. And he is, and I think that's why they've got the election for new people, because this would be the end of the year and the new people take office. One will be incumbent, Lisa Hicks Clayton will be returning, but the other two new folks will be coming in there. But anyway, it's a nice little story there about his years of service and more than two decades, actually, of service to the city of Dearborn. And he's going to spend more time with his family. Oh, that's great. Mm-hmm. And so thank you for all your service to the city of Dearborn Heights, Ken. Maybe we'll get a chance to talk to you in your retirement. Have time to come to the WH4 Journal or something. That's always something to do when you're retired, right, John?
Come over here and talk. Yeah.
Yeah. Join the staff. Start a talk show.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a in-depth story, always a great review of what's happening in the Dearborn Public Schools from Katie Hetrick, who was the freelance reporter on that topic for, and I think only that topic, for the Press and Guide. And she does a great job of making the business of the Dearborn Public Schools readable and somewhat and very informative, too. And so it says, teaching students better behavior, helping them get online and protecting them while they are there, were among the issues discussed at Dearborn Public Schools Board of Education meeting this last Monday. Restorative practices, which is another one of those buzzwords, yeah. Phrases, is a system designed to help students realize how their misbehavior affects others around them, including the victims, and gets them to think about how to repair the damage they have done. What was the more common term for restorative practices?
Not me.
Well, when people come out of prison, they're put on parole.
Right.
But they're given rehabilitation.
Rehab, okay. Yep.
Yeah, but rehab is too strong a term here. We don't want to tell kids they're in educational rehab. So it's called restorative practices is the name of the activity. All these new clever terms so that nobody gets offended.
Re-education. How about that one?
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, brainwashing is another one we could use. But, yeah, get them out of their previous mindset into the right one. Brainwashing.
Recondition them.
Mind control.
Yeah.
I'm just joking here. Okay. And Ibrahim Mashour is director of student services. He says, our ultimate goal is to reduce suspensions and improve behavior. When you suspend a student, you often don't take care of the problem. That was from Violet Suwadane of Etzel Fort High School. Suspended students may come back angry at the teacher, administrators, or others, blaming them for the punishment. So, yeah, I can understand the value of counseling. It's like, why did this happen? And why did you feel the need to do whatever you did, you know? And how can we help you in the future not to be that disruptive and actually get on with your education, you know? Ultimately, you know, folks, you got to tell the kids it's their education that's at stake. Mm. It's not maintaining the school or the teachers or whatever. The big idea, and the good teachers, administrators know it's true. It's focused on the students, on the children, to get them educated and to give them options within their own lives, choices that they can make. Mm. And if they don't have any choices, well, they're not going to go very far.
No.
I have to pull up this other story that I don't think I covered before, and that is the graduation rate. No, it's not graduation rate. What did I say? It's the going to college rate.
Yeah, going to colleges after, mm-hmm. or going to further education after.
Right, I'm leaning away from the mic. Thanks, John. Right, yep. It's the how many graduate and go to college. I think that's the story.
Yep.
And, I can't pull it up here out of my thousands of papers that are turning on the air. John and I are surrounded by papers. No, it's not that.
You had it right with
it. I thought I had it. I showed it to John. Well, anyway, the story is that most of those who graduate from Dearborn schools that go to college, it's only about 60% average in the district. A couple schools, it's as high, like Dearborn High School, 64%, I remember. But still, that means that the others don't go to college. More than a third graduating don't go to college. Now, I think maybe they might go to college later. They might take a year or two off, save up some money.
Yep.
I don't know if the number that number indicates if they went to college, but they went to college outstate. You would think if their parents still live here, that the survey could represent that. But then there's, as it used to be in the olden days when I went, when I graduated in the 60s, a high percentage of the women went right into marriage. So, yeah, well, I don't need to go to college. I'll just marry a rich guy, you know. My boyfriend, he's got a great job at the local gas station, you know. Yeah. I mean, I heard that in the 60s, and maybe gas station jobs were better then than now, if there are many jobs, because there's nobody to help you pump your gas anymore. It used to be a lot of people, jobs for people just to go out and help you pump your gas, you know.
And wipe and wash your windows.
Wash your windows, no extra charge sometimes.
Check the oil. And
yeah,
thing,
but no sort of service-related stuff. There's one guy that hides in a little booth behind a bulletproof window, and you can pay money right with a credit card at the pump. So, you know, don't even necessarily see anybody. So I'm just saying there's not a lot of jobs at gas stations anymore. So, but, I mean, there could be some that took time off or married or whatever. But I still think that's a very low percentage going to college. When it was even obvious in the 60s, my counselor told me in the 60s, that those that don't go to college are going to be doomed to a low-paying job, which if you have a lifestyle that doesn't need much, you don't need a car.
No.
You're not going to have a family. or you're living on the streets in a warmer climate somewhere, then maybe you don't need as much money. For most people, yeah, you really need special education beyond high school. And I think you mentioned earlier,
right,
a point is that there are programs in vocational and tech schools.
Specialized training, computer training.
That can help a lot of people, not necessarily everybody, but, you know.
Learning a trade, plumbing or...
right. Yeah,
some
of those things need to get into an apprentice program with one of the local unions that are in charge of that. But so there are options there that would lead you to a decent life and a decent career, decent life, therefore, in terms of finance.
And those programs more than likely are going to take you into a college-like apprentice classes that are available for that.
Right, but the problem for me as a college teacher, I've got a bias here, is that you're only going to be trained in one particular specific way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a technical job just for plumbing, let's say, or electrical. And things change even in those careers in terms of equipment and procedures and even licensing. Okay, there's a wanted to mention this. Here's one of those tech programs, this tech program that we have right here at the college.
Yes.
Okay. And we have many of those. In fact, we have over 100 different certificate programs that don't lead to a college degree, although sometimes some of the credits would transfer over to a general college degree. But one of them is the program. The programs are, there are several here, okay. One program is for boiler operator.
Okay.
And you say, well, yeah, that's heating, cooling, okay. Hmm. But you need a big boiler in a big building. You got to maintain that in order to keep the heat going. What do I know about it? I don't know, but I'm just saying in general that's what it is. And these people are in desperate need, by the way. There are plenty of jobs, and they pay pretty well because they're very important jobs. Power plant operator is another spin on this. Stationary engineering.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. Mm-hmm. You know, making the engines work, but you don't go anywhere. They just create electricity. Interesting. I never heard that phrase, stationary engineering. Process plant technician, which is some additional spin, and also power building engineer programs, which are also available here. So let me give you a little background, folks. The electric and national gas utility industry across the country faces workforce shortages as aging skilled workers approach retirement and fewer qualified candidates are available to replace them. So the Center for Energy Workforce Development, which is CEWD, has identified gaps in the power generation energy workforce pipeline. In other words, there's openings, and has predicted that up to 46% of the workforce, and that's over about 200,000 high-skilled, high-wage workers, may need to be replaced soon due to retirement or attrition. And I'm not sure if that's Michigan only.
Mm-hmm.
That's an awful lot of people if it's Michigan only. But there are a lot of jobs. And so they are sponsoring this program. The HFC Power Building Engineering Program is sponsored by the Michigan Electric Utilities as a partner in this Center for Energy Workplace Development. Here's why I mention it. You can find out more about the HFC Power Building Engineer programs and all those different spins and varieties of jobs right here on campus. And I'm sorry I got this notice only early this week. One of the meetings was last night here on campus at 7:30, but they're having another one tomorrow, Saturday, December 19th at 3 p.m. And it's in the HFC technical building here on the main campus at Henry Ford Camp. Evergreen Road. Okay. They do want you to register in advance. Okay. So here, yeah. Now, if you don't have a pencil, you'd have to call somebody. And the person to call is the faculty member in charge, James Martini. Hmm. So you got to remember that name, Martini.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I know Jim. He's a wonderful guy, wonderful instructor. And his direct number for fastest contact on this is 313-330-3530. I'll give that to you again. James Martini, 313-330-3530. Now, also his email is, as you would expect, J, just the letter J, and then Martini, M-A-R-T-I-N-I. So jmartini@hfcc.edu. Remember to use the extra C in our name because we haven't changed the website email address yet. But that is tomorrow, Saturday, December 19th at 3 p.m. on the main campus, Tech Building, Henry Ford College, for a lot of informative sessions and descriptions from anyone that's interested, students on this campus or off-campus people, whatever. It's a great direction to go in because there is a need. And, it's very practical skills that you're learning to keep us all warm and cool at various times of the year.
What letter building is that, Jay? The tech building.
Well, that's I guess it's Building E.
Building E. Okay.
E for engineering. How do you like that? Sometimes that works out.
Mm-hmm.
We're in Building M here on campus.
Right.
I like to think it was the main building, but it's the student center. So that didn't. There's no correlation there.
No.
But yeah. Anyway. And I wanted to say, well, you might say, well, like, it's awfully short notice. I'm doing something tomorrow on December 19th at 3 p.m. Again, you can just get in touch with James Martini, and remember his email at least, jmartini@hfcc.edu, and he'll talk to you one-on-one at other times, okay? So that's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
I know we're just approaching the holiday season here, but remember, winter classes start in January. Winter semester classes start in January the 11th, Monday,
right,
January 11th,
yep.
And by golly, you got to get up and running and get enrolled in all that if you're not already here for something else. So jmartini@hfcc.edu for information about the HFC's Power/Building Engineering program and other programs related to that. Yeah, that's great news.
Yeah.
And providing something for other people. Let me see what else I've got here. I don't know if it's true. Driver's license are renewed basically any time of year. It's like within the month of whenever your birthday is, right?
That's right. Yep.
Well, I just wanted to share this. The city of Dearborn sent this press release out again. But don't forget that if you need to get your driver's license, not your registration for the car, but the driver's license renewed, they will do it. Because there's a little office right inside the main Dearborn police station. And Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, that's the only 3 days, from 9 a.m. to 4:30. That's Michigan Avenue, just east of Greenfield. And you can take your written driving exam if you need to at the Bureau, as well as renew an expiring license or replace a lost licenses. City of Dearborn is one of few cities to offer this service to its residents. You can just call the Dearborn Police Station for more information or directly to the Licensing Bureau. But again, they're not going to be open today, Friday, but you can call them and get their voicemail, I guess, 943-313-943-2468. They also do services such as fingerprinting. Why do you need to have your fingers printed?
To get a job.
For some job.
Some
that's
jobs,
right. Yeah,
need.
Yeah. So yep. They will do that. Also, if you're looking to purchase a gun permit and register a gun, their service hours are 12:30 to 4 p.m. on Wednesday or Friday. Oh, on Friday, it's 9 a.m. to 11:30. So all these little things going on there at the City of Dearborn Police Station. And by the way, the driver's license, which I just got mine renewed.
Okay.
And every time I walk in there, there's two people, two clerks, and they're never busy. So you just walk right up and get your business done. You're out of there in 2 or 3 minutes. I needed my picture taken this time.
Okay.
And that took a couple takes. But, you know, they actually, it's all done digitally, you know, electronics right. being what it is. So they said, with the first picture, they said, do you like that one? And I looked at it and said, no, my hair's out of place there, standing up. Just came in from windy outside. And I said, I didn't have a comb, but they didn't give me a comb, but I just sort of brushed my hair back down. So they actually give you a make-do on the, at least one anyway, make-do, and because there's nobody else there. Yeah. I mean, why not? They can give you personal service, and that's so cool. And it doesn't cost a penny more, folks, to go to the Driver's License Bureau at the City of Dearborn Police Department. They don't charge any extra amount. It would cost you the same thing to go to Secretary of State's, and it's in and out.
That's nice.
A lot
That's
of people great. Have said, and I've been there too, not real recently, but the Secretary of State's office on Schaefer Road, north of Michigan,
right.
is pretty busy.
Yep.
I think the word is S-L-O-W. Very slow. And so the city of Dearborn is losing money by providing the service, and I know we've talked to Chief Haddad, or Haddad.
Haddad, yes. I forgot that. Because
I mispronounced his name for, about the last 4 years since he's been in. Anyway, that they're always thinking of cost cutting, so should they cut that out? Because they're losing money mm-hmm. on it. But they won't cut it out, folks, if you use it. This is Dearborn residents only, though, let me say, I think. Yes, I'm pretty sure. Residents. Yes, it does say that. So this is for Dearborn Residents Special Service. And I say thank you very much, and please keep it going.
Yes, and we have also two Secretary of State offices in the downriver area that the same way, because when there was one, it was long lines. And now that there are two, it's very quick and streamlined, and there's always people questioning whether they need to or not. But I think that it's a very good service, and we should see it continue.
And just an update here, a lot of people came and contacted me on Wednesday. They said, did you hear the big news? It's all over the internet and blah, 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 about a raid on the Dearborn City Clerk's office. And, of course, I don't have that sheet of paper in front of me either. John, what's happening here? Maybe it's in this folder. Oh, I put it into my official folder.
You put it away.
No wonder I couldn't find it. I didn't open. You got to open the official folder to find things in there.
Gotcha.
But the follow up is, folks, is that the Michigan State Police were doing the investigating, and that's probably the best way to investigate wrongdoing in a city government, because they're impartial theoretically, and the crime that they suspect is embezzlement. Of course, the city clerk's office handles tax payments and payments for other things in the city, so there's money going in and out. Or at least coming in all the time. And so what they did was they collected a lot of documents, a lot of paper files.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll find out. Nobody was arrested. Nobody was charged or blamed with anything at this point. They were just looking for, see if there was evidence. But somebody must have given them a tip.
Yeah.
Turned the city clerk's office in. And said, I think someone there is, stealing money.
Siphoning money.
Yeah, something like that. So Kathy Buddha's name was mentioned in the story, but to be fair, no, they didn't say she was guilty of anything. Okay, she is the clerk in charge, but so she wasn't guilty of anything as far as we know at this point, and they're just investigating. But, the way these stories sometimes get sent out there, it's... It almost seems like, there must be something wrong. Well, they might actually discover there's nothing wrong. But they're investigating, so that's the thing to do, of course. That was Michigan State Police. That was a couple days ago. Nothing new on that. Couple stories. Another story that is sort of that we do to straighten out stories that might get into the rumor mill, and therefore you might misunderstand. And thank you to the Detroit Metro Times for doing this one. Although I didn't see the story originally, but their edition from this last Wednesday, December 16th. And I highly recommend you get a copy of the Metro Times or go to their website, metrotimes.com, and read their stories. They do investigative reporting. They do stories that really matter about Detroit and the surrounding area, and more now than ever. used to be there was only like one story, you know, the lead story, and that would be in depth. And there was nothing else but entertainment news. But since the new management has taken over, new owners have taken over, they're doing at least 6 or 8, I would say, news or news-related stories and opinion pieces every week. And this one is about Dearborn, that they're straightening it out. Apparently, a certain photo has been making the rounds, that means on the internet, with the urgent claim that it depicts pro-terrorist Muslim protesters in Dearborn. And it says this, quote, attached to the photo, "This is Dearborn, Michigan, after the radical Islamic attack in California! Exclamation mark. These are ISIS flags and ISIS supporters, folks." Okay, not proper grammar, but... ISIS supporters, folks, but the media has not reported because of political correctness. Hmm. Well, here's the correction, if you will, and thank you very much, Metro Times. They say this stuff is nothing new. Dearborn, with its high percentage of Arabic and Muslim residents, has been a frequent target of Truth Light Islamophobe bloggers. Hmm. Truth Light, that means just barely fraction of a truth. In other words, it's basically untrue. That's what Truth Light means, is basically untrue. Basically, mostly untrue. Okay. Whose outrageous claims have been even included that Sharia law prevails here in Dearborn. Of course, it's hard to take the people making such claims seriously, we know, those of us locally or who live in Dearborn like myself, or believe they've ever set foot in Dearborn. But these people do have their audience, and this is their red meat. Wild tales about a flood of foreign refugees coming to America with a strange religion and a history of radicalism and unrest. And they say in parentheses in the Metro Times story, you know, the same things 100% Americans said about Roman Catholics a century ago. Hmm. Yep, strange religion. Remember John F. Kennedy running for president. Few people said, "Oh, we can't elect a Catholic for president."
Roman Catholic running for president.
Well, no, he wasn't running. No, there was the guy in 1928 who was Catholic running for president, and he didn't win because of the backlash here. Oh, as soon as a Catholic would become president, he'll turn the country over to the Pope.
Oh,
he'll just simply do whatever the Pope tells him to. I have to say, in its opinion, and of course.
Yes, opinions expressed on this show are strictly the opinions of the hosts and do not necessarily reflect the views of WHFR or HFC.
Well, the opinion is that, you know, this particular Pope, I think maybe some people should listen to him a little more, like some of our political leaders. The Pope, Pope Francis, knows there is climate change caused by human beings, and he knows we've got to correct it right away. He knows, and he's got evidence, there's plenty of evidence, okay, about the inequality in our society in terms of rich and poor, and in terms of access to the political process, which, of course, the state of Michigan, that can be our next story, as it looks like today, the governor Snyder, well, we'll get on with that. But anyway, Roman Catholics used to be, it's hard to believe, but used to be a very suspicious religion because they follow that guy in Italy, you know. And the Metro Times goes on, "Well, those of us more familiar with the situation on the ground should have done what an astute blogger did at the New York Magazine. Jesse Singel researched the claims about these pro-terror Muslims in this story," and there's a picture here in the Metro Times, a photograph of the alleged protest by Muslim supporters of terrorism, "and found evidence all but proving it was a march against terrorism. He backs it up with plenty of research, not that it will matter to people who are convinced by a blurry photo showing some flags in the distance." Metro Times says, "We used to have a name for those sorts of people, nuts. But in today's environment, the ugly and absurd are fair game for those on the side of fear and loathing." Or as Singel, again, the New York Times, New York Magazine writer, politely puts it, quote, "This is what happens when the conversation about a minority group flies completely off the rails," unquote. So thank you, Metro Times, for straightening that out for the readers here in this area. And certainly we who live in Dearborn, Muslims or not, appreciate the correction. Okay. And what about Snyder? Okay. Well, Yes, the bill was passed by House and Senate, not George Durrani, I want you to know. Remember George Durrani's interview with us, which went about 40 minutes or
it
so.
It lasted a while.
Yeah.
Good long interview.
Yeah, didn't let you ask, I think, one question you got in or
that's
one
okay.
comment. But yeah,
yeah
but
good.
Oh, George is always full of information. And, of course, the legislature, and this is the one in Lansing, okay, our state legislature, they're not in session now. They're bye-bye for the holidays, okay. They did their deeds, but a lot of things they didn't finish off. There's no resolution to the energy problem in Michigan.
Nope.
There's no reinstatement or renewal yet for energy standards or energy policy for the future of business in Michigan and future of people living in Michigan. There's nothing that to do about the Detroit Public Schools, about saving the Detroit Public Schools from abject ruin. They're so deeply in debt now. They need a bailout. They need restructuring, even though the state has been managing them for the last 4 years or 5 years, is it now?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my goodness. So the legislature decided, well, we're not going to vote anything there. So the story is, and of course, Jay is looking for it here somewhere, but I memorized them, so don't worry, folks. I get it pretty much right, is that Snyder is getting the bill to rescind the right of voters to do straight ballot voting.
Okay.
So that is going to his desk. He'll probably sign that today, even though a lot of people, including League of Women Voters, have asked their members. I know I got a request to send an email to the governor, and I did. Even though I have to agree with a general principle that was made this morning on WDET, in their Detroit Today show, Stephen Henderson. And that is, you know, I would really like to recommend that people don't ever vote a straight ticket ballot, you know, pull down that lever, because just because you're a Democrat or a Republican or whatever party you're pulling down the lever for doesn't mean you're the best of the best.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could be that the most intelligent person, the most reasonable person, could be in a different political party, could be one of the other candidates. And there's also, of course, that issue about not just, you know, raw intelligence or reasonableness, but let's say you think you're a right-wing person. You support conservative issues, okay? Well, in some cases, a Democrat might be more right-wing than the Republican who's running there. See what I'm saying, folks?
Yeah.
That there's differences within each political party. And so if you clearly know you're a left-wing Republican, or is that possible? Bill Milliken. We mentioned him last week.
William Milliken.
Yeah. Known as Bill to his friends. You know, even if you know where they stand, whether or not they're a good human being or wise or I have to bring this up, that it matters to some people whether or not they're Christians.
Mm-hmm.
Or Muslims, or Catholics, and that shouldn't, in my humble opinion, but if you're, there's all kinds of ways to choose a person to vote for, and you have to look at all the candidates individually, and you say, well, how can I find, I know the question for me is always the judges.
Huh.
Which judge is the best? We hardly find out anything about them. Well, we might get a card in the mail. You know, circuit court judge or Wayne County judge or something. And there's always multiple names there. In some cases, it's like there's six names and they say, vote for six.
Yeah.
Well, you don't even have to vote. Why? Because all six will get at least one vote. I mean, that person running will vote for themselves. So they'll all be reelected.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they're usually always incumbents, too.
Lots
it's very
of,
interesting.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not that many challengers. So, you know, how do you handle that? Well, there are all kinds of ways to figure out who to vote for, folks. And I think I've said, and this is not fair, this is a terrible stereotype, but if I don't know about some of those lesser candidates, all of the things being equal, I would vote for the woman.
Okay.
Now, is that sexist? I guess it is. It's anti-male. I mean, but I'm sorry. Why? Because there's not as many women in office. And I think there's a different point of view there. I'm not saying it's totally different than a man's point of view, but sometimes it is because of the way they're born and educated, and it's just accidental. But, you know, the society enculturates women a little bit differently, and usually sometimes for the better. And so that's my default, and everybody can make their own choice there. There's no rationality to that except what I mentioned, and it's very little of that. But so personally, I'm against straight ballot voting, pulling that party ticket down. But that will frustrate a lot of people when they get in the ballot box. They will perhaps refuse to vote for more than just the top couple that they know of. And so that'll challenge a lot of other offices down the way. And I think Gary Warrenchuk, as a Wayne County Democrat, is probably not too worried. But that's certainly a problem or an issue to think of. But I think Snyder will vote on, will sign that today, because he's not getting too many other bills to sign.
No.
There's some minor things. In fact, in the Downriver paper that I know you have with you there, John, there's a cute. It's a very good story about bills that were passed that affect Downriver residents just recently, just in the last few days before the recess.
Right,
but they're not big bills that would affect us in Dearborn even that much. So I decided not to cover that. So there you go.
All right.
Okay, 10 minutes to go. Let's hear an opinion from, and we'll have a big finish and maybe a Christmas song. Uh-oh, watch out. At least Fox News will love us. We're not part of that war thing, are we? So let's see what we've got from Jack Lessenberry here. Where is it? Okay. Well, I think we've heard this one before, but one of the problems with, and we try to cover the legislature because they're the ones that pass the bills that affect us most directly here.
Sure. Yeah.
And so here's Jack Lessenberry's comment from just a day or so ago about too few media covering the legislature. Not WHFR, but of course we get our stuff from michiganradio.com.org, and it's a real problem of trying to find out what they're doing. And I think if you don't know what they're doing, they might go crazy, you know, because nobody tells them they're doing the wrong thing. So here it is, Jack Lessenberry's take on too few media covering the legislature.
I'm Jack Lessenberry. Once upon a time, newspapers and even TV stations in the state devoted intensive resources to covering Lansing. That wasn't because nobody'd heard of the Kardashians. It was because news organizations then realized that when it came to affecting our lives, state government really is the most important. Federal money is passed down through the states, and the states make rules for what local governments can do. Back in the 1980s, at least one Detroit TV station had a full-time Lansing bureau, and for a time, the Detroit News had 13 reporters in Lansing. These days, I don't think any newspaper has more than one. In the old days, citizens were regularly told when controversial bills were introduced and could make their opinions known. Now we're lucky if we get to read a story about what the legislature's done after the fact. This isn't good for anyone. I'm in better shape in terms of knowing what's going on than most because of a private news service called Gongwer, which does provide subscribers with a very detailed account of what state government is doing or about to do. Virtually every lobbyist and special interest group subscribes to Gongwer, or its rival, MIRS, the Michigan Information and Research Service. What this means is that we now have two kinds of citizens, a large group who know very little about what's being done to them, and the small set of elites with a lot of information. History would indicate that this is not a long-term prescription for a healthy and stable society. That's not to say we're in anything like a revolutionary situation, but this is clearly contributing to a sense of alienation. The lack of intense media scrutiny also fosters bad behavior in government. When the ancient Greek philosopher Plato imagined an ideal society protected by a class of guardians, Socrates supposedly said something like, "Who will watch the guardians?" For our society, it's always been the news media. These days, they are mostly not there. Yesterday, in a blatant power play which had nothing to do with anything the people wanted, the Republican leadership in the Senate locked everybody in, stripped the minority party of their staff, and rammed through a bill outlawing straight-ticket voting, killing one that would make it easier for people to vote absentee, and preventing voters from being able to overturn it. Senator Steve Beda, one of the chamber's more principled members, compared this to fascist dictatorship, and he was right. It's hard to imagine the architects of this coup, Majority Leader Arlen Meekhoff and Elections Chair Dave Robertson, getting away with this had it been on live television. Elsewhere yesterday, Gongwer interviewed Governor Snyder, and the news service reported that He would not say whether there was anything he'd learned from the Flint water crisis. 30 years ago, something that lame would have gotten any governor eviscerated by editorial cartoonists. Now the odds are that nobody'll notice. There's a whole lot wrong with this picture. Actually, when I think about it, what comes to mind is not Plato's Republic, but Camus' The Myth of Sisyphus. The stone really is at the bottom of the hill, and we the people really are alone.
Jack Lessenberry is Michigan Radio's news analyst.
Well, we're going to keep covering Lansing as much as we can find out, and because it does matter to us what goes on in the state. One of the more terrible bills that I hope doesn't get to the governor but might get passed is, John, it's a renewal of support to keep those Syrian refugees out of Michigan. Yeah. So, and there's another one. Renew support for Citizens United that... in Michigan, they're trying to do their own Michigan version to allow as much money to be spent by every individual person as they want to spend on supporting political candidates, even through political action committees and super PACs that don't require any transparency. So you never know who those people are that are giving that million or $2 million or whatever. Scary. Okay. So, finishing up the story, because Highway 61 with Kitty Love sitting in for Joanne today is coming up in just 5 minutes, 5 minutes away. You've got some stuff, John? Go.
Sure. Downriver Actors Guild has two more performances of Disney's Beauty and the Beast, 7:30 December 19th and 3 p.m. December 20th at the Catherine Daly Theater on Biddle, 2656 Biddle in Wyandotte. That is a show that is and is supported by the Downriver community and should be fun. For tickets, call 734-407-7020 or go to downriveractorsguild.net.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yeah. And the day in history. Again, this is our last live WHFR journal show for this year, because we will not be on next week. And then 2 weeks from today, we'll be back right on January 1st. Amazing. By 1 o'clock, we should be, the residue effects of the partying. It's not a matter of watching, Ryan at midnight, but we'll be here somehow dragging ourselves in at 1 o'clock, and hope you will tune back in again for another episode. But of course, you can always go online later if you're not up by 1 o'clock in the afternoon on the first, because after 2 o'clock, it'll be there at WHFR.fm. Well, today in history, December 18, 1620, Mayflower actually docks at Plymouth Harbor. Because you might say, well, I thought that's awfully late. Didn't they get here like a month or so before? Yes, they did, but they didn't. They lived on the boat for a month, and they were sending scouts out to find a place to start the colony. And they finally decided on an area that was vacated by an Indian tribe, the Wampanoag, because there was an outbreak several years earlier with a European disease that other explorers from Europe had one way or the other given contagious diseases to the unprotected Native Americans. And so their one way out was to avoid that area. The pilgrims did struggle that year. Over half of them died. Out of 102, 50 died. But thank goodness the Wampanoag tribe and their chief, Massasoit, signed a treaty with them and gave them support, taught them how to plant crops so they could survive. We often hear about the English-speaking, see how many settlers were there before the pilgrims? One Indian learned to speak English already, Squanto, and he spoke Squanto English, not pilgrim English, but still close enough, I guess. And that's how it all started. But bigger than that, 1865, slavery was abolished in America. So that is a big thing. And we're still trying to figure out how to make equality true, though, for everybody in this country. And as I told John, a really big day, 1946, Steven Spielberg, famous Hollywood film director, was born. Happy birthday, Stephen. You're as old as I am. So that's too bad, but anyway. And so we're going to end with a Christmas song. Any final seasonal wishes, John?
Well, very, very merry Christmas and great holidays to all. And you too, Jay.
Well, and to you, and from all of us here at WHFR, we hope you have a great, great holiday season, getting together with family. You know, don't go crazy about giving gifts, but just be very compassionate and maybe help the needy in some way. If you know a local charity that needs support, give them some way, somehow. Not necessarily money, but maybe you want to go and volunteer for a while. It's a great idea.
You don't have to look too far for someone to help.
Yep, that's absolutely right. So let's see here. I've got a number of tunes to choose from. Well, we'll go off big with this kind of like glam pop rock group from England. This is a big hit back in 1973. And for some reason, I'd never heard it before this year.
Oh.
I never heard it. Well, it was actually Christmas last year that I heard it for the first time. And I thought it was John Lennon. No, it's not John Lennon singing it. He was alive in 73, I think. But anyway, here it is. Merry Christmas, everybody, by Slade. Coming up next, Kitty Love, WHFR, Dearborn.